It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
The views given on the following program are not necessarily the views of the station management or staff. Since individual situations can and will be different, please remember this when exercising any options presented by our guests.
Success is equated with excess. The ambition for excess wrecks us. As the top of the mountain becomes the bottom line, where success is equated with excess.
This is Care for My Wealth. With Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, your fee-only investment firm. Now, here's your Care for My Wealth guide, Chris Klein.
Good Saturday morning to you. This is Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070 The Game. Hanging out this morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. The website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Great resource to learn more about Chris and everyone at Capstone Wealth Management. The telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. You can also email Chris for more information. Just send him an email, info@careformywealth.com. That's info at careformywealth.com. Chris, how you doing this beautiful Saturday morning?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing really well, and we are into that summertime season, it feels like. I know we're still in spring, but we've had some great days the past few days, and I know some great days as well. This week's been a pretty good one for you, and I was asking you before the show about a term I had heard. I think it was on Friday morning. Somebody had tweeted, and they used the phrase linear economist, and I thought, what is a linear economist? And I thought, I know somebody who would give me the answer. Chris, what is the answer? What's a linear economist?
Well, the fun answer is that if you take 1,000 economists and lay them all down head to toe, yeah, they'll all point in a different direction. That's what that really means. If you think linear economist, all that basically means is that the economist profession has a tendency to myopically focus itself on a number and then presume and figure out as best as they seem to be able where the next number is going to be and say, oh, okay, well, it's here and it's there, so it's going to be a straight line there, the end. Markets don't work that way, right? Everything is in flux, and everything, as anyone who's listened to the show for a while knows, that there's roughness on the edges, and that roughness, i.e. volatility, changes things. The one thing that you're never, ever, ever going to see or hear on mainstream financial media, CNBC or wherever, it doesn't matter, and I don't know why they don't do this, but they're never going to talk in rate of change terms as it relates to the important data points, like, for example, the jobs number, right? And why, I don't know. And frankly, I don't care. But the reality is that when they talk linear economist, there's no such thing really as a linear economist. It just means that they think linearly in terms of how they're coming up with their numbers. And it was grossly on display yesterday with the jobs report. So the jobs report had an expected number of like a million, right? And it came out at only 77% below what the linear economists were expecting, like at 266, and they downgraded the month prior. So a lot of people were looking at that going, oh my gosh, I can't believe that's happening. That's not right. That's a huge miss. And at the open yesterday, the rates market just took it on the chin, right? Mm-hmm. But the number doesn't matter. What matters is the rate of change. So it was our perspective that, okay, the numbers look bad in old wall perspective, and therefore the bond market it just starts to go nuts and rates sell off, which to us is, oh, hallelujah, candy. Thank you. Let's short more bonds, right? Because it was below the calculus end of 1.55% in the U.S. 10-year treasury, not to mention the fact that rates on a global scale were up. I mean, Italy, who talks about Italy, right? Italy, you look at their interest rate cycle, they were up 4 basis points on a day-over-day basis, and they're up 26 basis points month over month. Now, if you get an Italian bond moving 26 basis points in a month, holy smokes, that's a pile. And Germans' 10-year bund is likely to go positive. Well, holy cow, we haven't seen a positive 10-year German bund yield for years. That is not deflationary in terms of what we view via quad four. So yesterday, headline news, jobs huge miss. Wasn't a million, it was 266. Bond market interest rates sell off, hit the low, and all of a sudden turn around and just start to rip. Why? Here's why. If you look at the rate of change of the employment summary, the employment data, what you'd see, if you go all the way back to, like, for example, the January number, the rate of change number in January was down 6.24%. The rate of change number in February was down 6.07%. Uh-oh, getting better. The rate of change number for March was down, 4.5%. That's really getting better. And then this number, rate of change, oh my goodness, positive 11%. Kind of like holding a ball with a whole bunch of air underneath the water and it slips through your hands and pops up and gives you a bloody nose. That's where interest rates are headed, because the number doesn't matter. That 266,000, the 6.1% unemployment, all that junk is just narrative nut speak. It doesn't matter. It's the rate of change. How fast is the movement of the ball from one spot to another? And it doesn't happen linearly. It happens over a period of time, and it happens in time and space based on what's happening in market time, not necessarily clock time, right? So what does this do? By the way, I mean, you think about it from that rate of change term. That's massive. That's an excellent number when thinking about it going from negative 4.5 to a positive 10.87. Right? Mm. I mean, I don't know, last time I checked, negative 4 to positive 11, that's pretty darn good. What it does is it sets up the next month. It sets up May to be absolutely huge. So March was up pretty big, because again, it went from rate of change negative 6.07 to rate of change negative 4.5. That's a big number. It was a big print for the March number that at that point in time, obviously, again, back there, linear economists and old wall wasn't expecting it. Now April comes along, oh, it's a huge miss, unless you're looking at it from rate of change terms. So what's it do when a big miss happens? Gets people to freak out, buy lots of bonds. The whole world's coming to an end. Rates are going down. I have to be able to buy tech. So what you saw in the beginning of yesterday's opening market move, tech was up huge, which is awesome. I mean, we bought the holy smokes out of tech this past week because it was on sale, hitting the low end of the calculus range. So that's what you do. If a position is bullish within the confines of a particular economic quadrant, a particular economic segmentation, in this case, as we've been talking, quad two, growth, accelerating inflation, you buy that stuff on sale. That's the bottom line. The market's viewing it from a totally different perspective. And so they're looking at it in contexts of, oh, rates are going down, I must buy tech. So, you know, you get this huge bounce when the whole world is doing something that, to me, the reason why doesn't matter. The fact is that we just followed the math and that's that. Call it lucky, call it whatever you want. But that big miss in April now gets people to freak out. And then they're going to set themselves up totally wrong going into the May number, which is going to be ginormous. And so we're setting ourselves up for May. We're not setting ourselves up for what's already been done. We're looking at, okay, where's that ball rolling to now? Where's that puck sliding off to? So in that context, on the open yesterday, what did we do? We shorted more treasuries and we shorted more gold. Why? Because real rates are continuing to go up. At least that's what our math is telling us. And so therefore, that's what I'm going to do. Could I be wrong? Maybe. there's going to be a time, Sean, when we're talking and say, I was wrong. There was a pivot and we didn't see it. Now, I don't think that's going to happen in the confines of where we're dealing with on a day-by-day basis, because the market in terms of commodities, rates, and currencies give you some lead perspective on when things look like they're shifting or changing or getting really, really bad, right? And we're not seeing any of that. I mean, if you take a look at commodities, corn off the charts, literally parabolic, copper off the charts, literally parabolic, uranium, same thing. You can't find me a commodity that's not done that. I saw a train load of like 2x4s go by and I thought, wow, they're pretty laissez-faire about taking their gold from one place to another, you know?
Where's the armed guards? Yes.
Right. Right.
Did I see,
thought, you know?
And I thought I saw something about steel prices as well recently. Was
up at a 3x rate. Wow. So base metals, copper, tin, steel, aluminum, name me a metal and it's all going to the moon. Why has it gone to the moon? Because the dollar keeps getting hammered. You get these counter trend bounces that happen, right? We had a counter trend bounce about a week ago. So April 29th, the dollar sort of bottomed out, hit the low end of the mathematical range, bounced on a counter trend bounce up to the top end of the mathematical range, and then boom, fell apart Thursday, Friday, right? Friday hit the low end of the mathematical range. It would not be surprising to see a counter trend bounce in the US dollar up again. If that happens, what's going to occur? You're probably going to see the US stock market defined by the S&P 500. You're going to probably see oil. You're going to probably see commodities in general come down some. You know, and so why? Well, because there's an inverse correlation to the US dollar move to all those three things that I just mentioned. If there's an inverse dollar correlation on a 30-day basis, now remember, a 30-day basis is 1 month price momentum. 1 month price momentum is what the street, i.e. consensus, chases. So therefore, if they chase that, then you kind of look at the inverse correlation factor and how it works and say, all right, there's a higher likelihood that if we get a counter trend bounce up in the US dollar, because that's all it would be. It's not a breakout. It's not looking, you know, in a single factor moving average or something silly like that that doesn't back test or work. If anyone's listening right now and you're managing your money on a functional basis of following moving averages, don't do that. That doesn't work. It just doesn't. I could show you so many instances on a back-tested basis whereby doing that only gets you in trouble. So at any rate, if you get a counter trend bounce in the US dollar, which again would not surprise us, why? Because it hit the low end of the calculus of the mathematical range. The high end of the mathematical range right now is 91.49. So what's that mean? We could see the dollar index counter trend bounce to about 91.49. If that happens, fine. Probably short more dollars. If it doesn't happen, big deal. We're still long commodities because we don't think this commodity cycle is even close to being over yet. And so what people have to remember is that when you think about the movement of macro assets, not just stocks, but rates, commodities, currencies, all this stuff, commodities lead interest rates, right? If you took a chart of the 10-year treasury rate, what you'd see over the past roughly month and a half is nothing more than a sideways consolidation in that rate move. But then if you overlaid on top of that a picture of the CRB or essentially any commodity, agricultural, rates, you name it, those things are straight up. Commodities lead rates. So therefore, what does that mean? If commodities have gone almost straight up, it means the likelihood is that rates are going to follow it after this consolidation has just occurred. And remember, one of the things that I talked about last week is that in the calculus of the rate range, the movement of the 10-year treasury yield, it was consolidating, it was compressing like a spring. And so you get that compression like a spring, and then all of a sudden, pow, the top end of the rate range moves higher while the low end doesn't move down, but either stays the same or moves up. And then you get a sell-off in the bond market, which drives a lot of buys in the bond market, which drives rates and yields down. And then you get a sell-off and rates turn around. So we're of the perspective that rates are going to rip from here higher, probably to the tune of 1.75-ish, maybe 1.77 on the 10-year treasury, because commodities have ripped higher. So commodities lead rates. Rates lead the CPI. So that's the next thing that's going to come out. And when that gets printed with a three handle and the whole world goes nuts and then they start chasing commodities. I mean, you think you've seen commodity inflation now. Holy smokes. But when that's all done, what do you get? You get the Fed coming out. Oh, well, it looks like we've saw a little inflation here. Rates are higher and commodities and blah, blah, blah. They come out and they tell you what just happened. Well, that doesn't help you as an investor. That gives you zero lead time on trying to figure out how do I position my portfolio today. So this consolidation that has taken place in the U.S. 10-year treasury has caused, I think, a lot of people to go out and reposition their assets into various bond holdings, including U.S. treasuries. That is not the place to be, at least not yet, at least not based on what our math is telling us. So we have to view it from the context and the confines of where we are in the economic cycle, that economic sine curve, and we are not yet mid-cycle. I know there's some narratives floating around out there where some people are suggesting on old wall TV, hey, this is mid-cycle, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not. We are very, very early. One of the things I wrote down in my notebook on Thursday is that right now is literally the earliest part of the labor market recovery, the labor cycle recovery, and the earliest part of the inventory cycle. That's an important thing to understand when considering how do I position my assets. And that's why so many people have unfortunately gotten themselves wrong in this, because they're afraid of a market crash and they pull themselves away right when the meat of the thing is getting put on the table. And that's exactly where it's at. So we've seen this week some interesting developments in implied market volatility against realized volatility. We've seen some very interesting things develop in just the math of the movement of the various ranges that we track and follow on a day-by-day basis. The catalyst for an interest rate move to the high end over the next who knows how long was yesterday's jobs number. The linear economists got it completely wrong because they're not looking at a rate of change. They're simply looking at a number and another number and then saying, here's where we're going. So what does that mean? Well, the economists are going to take that number. Like last month, they took 977,000 or a million and said, well, you know, this is the starting point. And they do some fiddle diddle and they give you another number, some number greater than that, because, well, we think it's going higher. Well, now it's gotten blown to high heaven, and now they're taking that number and fiddle-diddling around with it and saying, well, we're going to give you some perspective and give you another number and go to that one. Well, that number is going to be way below what the number is going to be. And so all of a sudden, it'll be right back to holy surprise, right? Well, now having heard this, hopefully you won't be surprised.
You've been prepared. You've been given a heads up. He is Chris Klein with Capstone Wealth Management. Of course, Chris comes to us from Capstone Wealth Management. The website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Telephone number 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. We'll continue our conversation with Chris. We will talk a little bit more about that CPI and also talk a little bit about where we've been and where things are going as we get a peek into Chris's notebook. We will do all of that next as Care for My Wealth continues right here. Fox Sports 1070, The Game. This is Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game, talking with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. The telephone number at Capstone Wealth Management, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. And again, that website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. And Chris, it was an interesting week, and especially Thursday, some stuff jumped out at you. What was going on Thursday?
Well, so if you look at market action on Thursday until the close started to get closer, right? So until about an hour close, what you saw, especially in the NASDAQ, was a sell-off. And, you know, the NASDAQ had sold off for about, as of Thursday, about 5 days straight. And so there were some, especially in, you know, the world of traditional old wall technical analysis, suggesting, hey, this whole thing could easily fall apart from here. And, you know, this looks bad. And so, I mean, you had a lot of negative stuff. Well, The NASDAQ came down to a low on the day, on Thursday, of 13,439. That's just slightly below what the previous low was set for the trade cycle. Again, trade cycle is 3 weeks or less, and that was set in on Tuesday of the week, right? However, what happened was is that it was a degrossing event by the hedge fund community one more time. And so the things that kind of gave you the clues that this was happening, well, a number of different clues were telling you that this was happening. First of all, when you were sitting down and looking through the mathematics of the volatility cycle, what you were seeing were a consistent series of lower highs in the high end mathematical calculation of broad equity market volatility. Broad equity market volatility is defined by the VIX for the S&P 500, VXN for the NASDAQ, and RVX for the small cap market, the Russell 2000. And what you'd see are these bouts, what we call episodic and non-trending bouts of volatility, happening literally ever since the beginning of the year. And there's like one of them per month that takes place. And in each one of those moments, what it resulted in was a lower high for each of those volatility segments. And in each of those spikes of volatility, these episodes or spikes of volatility, a hedge fund community had to degross their positions. Now, what does that mean? Degross positions just means that they had to sell out of stuff that they were in for whatever reason. It was going against them, and whoever was running whatever at whatever fund, either the whole fund or a carve out at it, got tapped on the shoulder and they sold everything. And that's one of the things that I don't think a lot of people fully and truly understand, that if you're a hedge fund manager and you're running a $200 to $400 million block of money at a really big, you know, several billion dollar fund, which, by the way, there's a lot of them, and you get tapped on the shoulder, the mothership just doesn't go, well, you know, let's hold on to some of this stuff and let's see if the news report says. And so no, they sell everything. Have a nice day. Boom. 400 million hits the market. Goodbye. So you get these episodes of volatility where it takes place. And how you know that is that there's some data feeds that you can get. One of them is prime brokerage data. And all hedge funds, of course, provide this because they all have a prime broker, where, in other words, where the money is, where the account is being held that the trading takes place at. And when you take a look at how single stocks were reacting on a Thursday move like that, comparative to how the index was moving, you were able to identify the fact that they were selling out some stuff, not because it was bad, but because they had no choice. That was just what was going on. And so there's this thing called the hedge fund concentration risk report, and you run it against the top holders. And then you just basically find in each name that the high hedge fund concentrations were going down faster than the rest of the market. Well, like I said, when that's happening, it's because somebody just got tapped out. They got hit on the shoulder and said, hit the bricks, buddy. Have a nice day. You didn't do well. It's a brutal business, but it does happen that way. And so it gives you some clues as to that taking place. The next thing that you have to do when considering how all that stuff is playing out, and more importantly, I think, is just view it through the context of volatility. I mean, we've seen so many instances and so many times as volatility has been trending lower, not higher, right? So a non-trending basis just means that we're looking for it to continually trend in a bullish fashion or continue in the direction that it's going, bullish for prices, bearish for volatility, because they work inverse to one another. And that's what we've been getting.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
And so you have to look at the volatility and say, is it doing anything different? It's not putting in higher highs or higher lows. It's just simply giving us an episode of volatility. And then you have to look at the cross asset class volatility stuff. So you look at oil volatility, you look at treasury bond volatility, you look at gold volatility, silver volatility, you look at high yield spreads, you look at currency rate volatility, and you look at all this stuff individually and then together and ask yourself, is the picture being painted something of a collapse or something of a hemorrhage about to happen? Well, high yield spreads didn't move. In fact, this past week, we actually saw high yield spreads at like the lowest level of the cycle. Well, what's a high yield spread? It's just comparing a junk bond, a high yield bond, and its yield to a safe treasury bond yield. And the difference between the two gives you a quote spread, right? If the spread widens, there's stresses starting to eke into the market. And if that spread gets too big, it kind of breaches a level on a rate of change basis that causes us to go, something's not right. And then that helps you to make a choice and a decision on whether or not you want to be over or underexposed to certain parts of the market, right? So that's one. The MOVE Index, which is the treasury bond market, it was not giving us any indication of massive stresses. Now, the treasury bond market volatility was literally like that coiled spring sitting on the low level, stayed there all week long. And I think that Friday, yesterday, where interest rates bottomed themselves out, and now with the labor report coming out being the catalyst for a higher move, I think we see interest rates rip, but it's ripping because the MOVE Index is likely going higher. So as that happens, that just provides opportunity for those who are short treasuries to be able to continue to generate alpha, make money for their portfolio. Gold volatility, not crazy, but remember, if rates are going higher, real rates continue to move up. So when you look at interest rates on a nominal basis and then on an inflation adjusted basis, real rates are going higher within this segment of quad two. That's terrible for gold. So we're of the opinion that interest rates rip from here and that gold just goes down. And I know it had a really good day on Thursday and Friday, but we were shorting more gold. Why? Because that's what our process says you do. The math says that's what you do. So instead of listening to some narrative rolling out of the TV that, you know, the government's spending like a drunken sailor, and so therefore gold has to do better. No, that's not how it works. We have to look first at the interest rate cycle. And we first get clues on the interest rate cycle from what happens in the commodity cycle. Because remember, commodities, rates, and then Fed telling you a story, right? So in looking at all that, currency volatility, a big ho-hum, nothing happening. Oil volatility, same thing. Episodic spikes and then just continuing to trend lower. So it spikes higher, you add oil, it falls apart, you sell some oil, right? The MOVE Index, not doing a lot, but it will do a lot more likely than not this coming week simply because of where we see the interest rate cycle headed. High yield spreads, again, no stress, a big ho-hum. VXN, RVX, the NASDAQ and Russell volatility continuing to look as a trending lower type of a scenario. And so all of that points towards the high likelihood that volatility continues to break down. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have these episodic spikes. We probably will. It wouldn't surprise me to see the VIX spike sometime this next week. I don't know. The math suggests it could spike to about 19 again. All right. Well, if that happens, we'll take some of the stuff that we sold yesterday because it was green and hitting the high end of the mathematical range, and we'll buy the stuff that is on sale sometime maybe next week if it's on sale. If it's not on sale and it keeps tapping the mathematical high end, we'll sell some more. And that's how you risk manage the edges. You have a mathematical probability built into your model that shows you the high likelihood movement of any one asset class. And as it taps the top, you sell a little. It does it again, you sell a little more. It does it again, you sell a little more. You don't worry about what's going on with the narratives, the Fed, linear economists, numbers, or anything else. You think of the rate of change. You get the best positions that backtest the best within the confines of the current economic sine curve. And you just manage the edges of those massive positions. And then when it goes on sale, you buy them all back. I know it sounds simple. it's not super simple, but the concept certainly I'm hoping you understand is the process of risk management.
Talking this morning with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. This is Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070 The Game. The website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. And the telephone number 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. So we had Thursday and Friday where gold was doing well. And I think one of the big challenges for folks is putting their money where the sale is, where the opportunity is. I think for a lot of us, we see things, you know, doing well, going up, the value going up, and, you know, and we think, well, that's what I've got to jump on. That's the one I've got to go to. We have no real way. You might talk about, you know, the analysis and the guide rails and those type of things. And that for most of us, we go, yeah, but what, why would I buy something that might be cheaper than it was a couple of days ago? Why wouldn't I put my money somewhere that I see something that's been rising the past couple of days? That's a tough thing for folks to do, isn't it?
Why is it that we don't want to buy investments on sale, but everything else would go to the ends of the earth to buy it on sale? It just, it blows my mind. I just never can understand that. But you're right. You know, it's an emotion thing. You know, it's a fearful thing because it's like, well, you know, it's this nebulous thing that my money is sitting around in some investment somewhere, and I have no idea where it's going to move to. See, this is where a calculus process behind an investment process is so valuable. You know, and this is what's taught by our risk management partner at Hedgeye. These guys put together a tremendous amount of data in everything and everywhere. And you brought up gold. I can tell you this. Thursday and Friday were the best selling opportunities for gold since February. I mean, the best. I wanted to get very, very net short in gold, and we did. I think I maxed out net short in our accounts for a gold position. Now, how far does it go down from here? Well, the math suggests that we could see spot gold come down to about 1757. Well, on Friday, gold was trading in the range of about 1840, right? Okay. Well, going from 1840 down to the, you know, on spot gold, 1750 is pretty, that's a pretty good move. And we think it would cause gold itself to, I mean, that, you know, you look on it on a percentage basis, that's a few percentage point move. So, you know, if we can make money when something is falling, I want to take advantage of that. And I'm not doing it because I hate gold. I'm doing it because the math says gold is not an investment to hold inside of quad two growth with inflation accelerating. Gold is a position that you get rid of in the midst of quad two. Now, does that mean you can't hold your physical gold? If you've got bars of gold sitting in a safe somewhere, does this mean you should be selling it? No, there's nothing wrong with holding on to physical gold. But if you've got paper gold in your portfolios, which a lot of people do, that's a terrible place to be. You know, we got to remember that quad two really started kicking in gear in November. And if and since November, the price of gold has come down, you know, roughly 8-9 percentage points. And yet at that same time, if we think about how the equity market has functioned since November, the S&P 500 itself, from like November 1st, is up like 28%. So if you were scared to death of the economy and the election and, I don't know, come up with 100 other different stories and narratives, whatever you want to listen to, and you put all your money in gold and treasury bonds, you'd be completely getting hammered right now. That's not good. We simply want to try and find those asset classes that have performed on a back-tested basis really, really well. And you can't do that by just, you know, pointing your finger into the wind and saying, hey, we're going to do that. There's a lot of study that goes on to figuring out what performs well in the midst of any one economic cycle. And this economic cycle that we're in is, I mean, Sean, the rate of change numbers that we're getting the opportunity to experience, because remember, the base effects, the stuff that's being compared against, are from March and April of 2020.
Oh.
Well, I don't know that we're going to get ever in my lifetime an easier comparison on a rate of change positive basis than what we're experiencing right now. I mean, this is literally an epic type scenario that's taking place. And I don't think that a lot of people fully grasp that because it's easy to forget how terrible on a number perspective things were March and April of 2020. So if you look at it from a rate of change situation, it lets you take your eyes off of having to be myopically focused on just a number and then wonder, well, what do I do with that number? I mean, an economist tells you that, well, our expectation is a $750,000 or a 750,000 jobs print. Well, what do I do with that? What does that tell me? Does it tell you anything?
Not me anything. Nothing at all.
It tells me nothing. Absolutely nothing. But what if you looked at it from a rate of change perspective and you started to see over a period of time a rate of change positive move in the movement of the labor market, what that's telling you is that, hey, the labor market's bottoming. And if it's bottoming, that tells us that it's at some point going to go positive. And when it goes positive, it's going to be in the very early stages of the labor market recovery. Labor market recovery, very early stages of the inventory market recovery. Those two things have a very large driver in the confines of economic activity. And you can see it happening in earnings numbers right now. I mean, right now, if we look at how some of the earnings data has come out, I think 80 some percent, like 430, 440 companies of the S&P 500 have reported. And on balance, earnings growth is up about 48%. If we look at like financials, for example, because financials do really well when interest rates are rising, and we've been talking rising interest rates for quite some time now, earnings growth for financials are up 132%. The market's going to chase these things because that's what they do. Now, could we get a minor sell-off over the next few days that causes the world to freak and say, yep, see, it's the end? Yeah, maybe. I hope so, because then I get to buy more. At least I get to buy more on sale so I can regross the stuff that we sold this week, like on Friday yesterday, so we could take advantage of a sale. But that earnings growth is absolutely epic. Are we going to see that again? I have no idea. Maybe. But I want to take advantage of what we can take advantage of now and not get too worried about what the narratives are or are not, you know. And so we've just got to be like hunker down a little bit and say, all right, is the best yet to come? It could very well be. At some point it rolls over, and it rolls over when the rate of change stops moving up, but yet rate of change becomes negative. And that's highly possible and probable in the third quarter and not now.
We'll continue our conversation with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. In the meantime, you need to head on over to the website, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Telephone number 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. More information online, careformywealth.com. This is Care for My Wealth right here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game. This is Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070 The Game, talking with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management. Don't forget you can learn more about Chris and everyone at Capstone Wealth Management. The website, careformywealth.com. The telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. And Chris, as we've been talking this morning, I'm kind of looking at what's been going on. And let's take a little bit to kind of, and I know we've touched on it a bit, just kind of where things are kind of indicating that they're stuff is going to be going in the near future. What should we be watching this upcoming week?
Yeah, so I think this upcoming week, it starts and stops with the movement of the dollar and the movement of interest rates. Interest rates, based on yesterday's jobs data and number that came out, that the rates are going to rip. And that's definitely what we're positioned for. I think our largest right now is actually short treasuries. And when I say we as a whole, I mean us as a company, my family's personal money, clients that we manage for. That's the way we do it. You know, we don't sell stuff. We manage stuff. And we're managing it for ourselves, our employees, and everybody that we're blessed to work for. So with interest rates moving up, what that likely does is also cause financials to move up with it. Financials tend to do well as interest rates go higher. So broad financials, money centers, banks, regionals, all that sort of stuff likely do better. At some point, we don't know when this might be. I suppose the world of tech could start to sell off a little bit because rates go up too far too fast. It doesn't appear that that's going to be the case now. For us, tech is along in the midst of this economic cycle, as are the best positions in this current economic cycle, which remain financials, energy, industrials, and materials. And so the only thing we want to do is risk manage the edges by selling a little bit. And what do I mean by a little bit? Like 25 basis points at a time. Our maximum equity position in any of those would be 6%. So if we get to a 6% max, we take 25 basis points off when it hits the top of the mathematical level. And when it comes back down towards the low end of the mathematical level, we buy it up. And we just, you know, we may go several days by selling just a little bit, little bit, little bit, and then it drops hard and then we buy it back, right? So you're risk managing the edges. That's what risk management is designed to do. So interest rates likely head higher. Commodities likely head higher. However, it wouldn't surprise us to see a little bit of a backup this this next week because the dollar got oversold. And so since the dollar was oversold, it would not surprise us to see a counter trend bounce in the dollar. A counter trend bounce in the dollar might take it up to 91.40, 91.45, 91.50. As that happens, because there's an inverse correlation on a one-month price momentum basis for the dollar and the CRB, which is the commodities index, probably gives us a chance to buy a bunch of commodities. So on Friday, we were selling some of the equity positions that we were holding because VIX came down towards the low end of the mathematical range. When something hits the low end of the mathematical range, the probability goes up that it goes to the high end of the mathematical range. So as it moves to the high end of the mathematical range, prices come down. When prices come down, you buy them back. So our setup for the following week is going to be to look for buying opportunities in the midst of a pullback or at least a consolidation of some type in the major commodities that we continue to want to own. And remember, the world is being electrified. You need copper to electrify the world. And it's not just happening in the U.S. It's global. So we still think Quad 2 is running and running hard. And so a broad portfolio, a portfolio for us, Sean, probably has close to 50 positions in it. And we don't ever want to get overexposed in any one area. We want a broad range of asset classes that provide our clients the ability to have a strong risk-managed portfolio that can withstand some stresses in markets. And it's interesting, when the best positions are acting like the best positions, markets can sell off for a little bit, and it doesn't matter. They keep going up. And that's what you saw this week in financials, industrials, materials, and energy. So if they pull back a little bit next week, okay, fine. You know, we'll buy some back. And that's how we're going to keep moving it until we get that pivot that says it's not Quad 2 anymore. But I think we're a ways away from that.
And we'll talk with Chris next about getting in touch with him, starting the process and the conversation with Chris and the team at Capstone Wealth Management. We'll do all of that next as Care for My Wealth continues right here. Fox Sports 1070, The Game. Fox Sports 1070 and Care for My Wealth, talking with Chris Klein of Capstone Wealth Management, the website careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. And Chris, great show as always. A lot of fantastic information for folks who listen this morning. You want to get to know you, want to get a little bit more information about Capstone Wealth Management. What's that process like?
We try to make it as simple as possible. So we're happy to meet you in person, face-to-face if you'd like, a Zoom call if you'd prefer, over the phone to start a conversation. Just to give you an inclination or an indication, rather, of how we function, it's all about helping you risk manage your investment life. I have zero interest in seeing my family or my clients go through a massive market decline. I mean, none. I don't like to see things get hit. And unfortunately, so many people have gone through so many bad markets that they've come to believe, well, that's just part of being an investor. That's just how it goes. I'm telling you, it doesn't have to be that way. We completely missed the 2020 implosion, all right? We were completely out of the market in February. And I don't see at this point, based on cross asset class volatility and other things that are happening, a massive market implosion in the near term, but it's coming. It will happen again because the rate of change will change. That's just how it works. And so when the rate of change changes, the market will change and you have to be prepared for it. I'll do my best to prep you here on the show as time goes on, because I definitely want to give you a good read into how that stuff works. But we definitely have open opportunities to help you be a better investor by just kind of being your concierge driver, which is kind of how it is, actually.
Well stated, well stated. That telephone number, 866-596-9886. That's 866-596-9886. Chris would love to talk with you at Capstone Wealth Management. You can learn more online, careformywealth.com. That's careformywealth.com. Chris, you have a fantastic weekend. We'll do it all again in 7 days.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
This is Care for My Wealth here on Fox Sports 1070, The Game.